Hey, Redeemer, it is Father Alex. We're rebranding, and I think we're going to call it your three favorite fathers, Father Gary, Father Colby, and, of course, me, Father Alex. Here we are back again. We're actually not going to call it that. We are here today to talk about Holy Week. Holy Week's coming up. Whenever this is released, soon. And so we just want to kind of give the background, give the rationale, and invite you to participate in this most holy of weeks. I think it's the heart of the Christian calendar in a lot of ways, and what certainly drew me into the Anglican way of life. But let's start just with the most basic. When we say Holy Week, what do we mean by that?
Yeah. Well, we start at Palm Sunday. And so you do the Liturgy of the Palms on Palm Sunday. You have the liturgy outside with palm branches. We process into the church, and then we read the Passion narrative, which kind of the idea of that Sunday is to consider how quickly we move from shouting Hosanna to crucify him. And then, Maundy Thursday, and we could talk about the specifics of each service later, and then Good Friday, Holy Saturday, which leads then to Easter Vigil, which is kind of the pinnacle where we shift from Holy Week to Easter. And so it's oftentimes called the Triduum, which means 3 days. It can refer to any 3 days, but it's become kind of associated with Holy Week because those three services, Maundy, Good Friday, into Easter Vigil, are considered one service, actually. So when you start Maundy, you should consider yourself starting a service that basically lasts for 3 days.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, and you got something to say?
Oh, no. Well, I was just, this is just completely off the cuff. I'm just thinking about how much time slows down. Mm-hmm. I mean, to think that one service can include, okay, I'm going to go home and I'm going to sleep. I'll put my kids down and then come back. That one service in terms of the liturgy, the words spoken and its, conclusion lasting over 3 days, that we're really, slowing down. And even like literally when you're reading the Gospels, typically when you get a lot of details, that's the story slowing down, and I think, in my mind, practically, it sounds like Holy Week is a time to slow down or get on perhaps a more kairos time or divine time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the Gospels, somebody said that the Gospels are basically prologues of the Passion narrative, like the more than half the Gospels are about the Passion narrative. And then, there's no benediction. There's no sending. Mm-hmm. It's just we're living in this time for the time. So I think when I'm, coming from the Baptist tradition, the critique on walking through Holy Week in a way like this would be to say, well, every Sunday is Easter Sunday, right? Like we don't live, even on the church calendar, we don't live in a church time. It's every Sunday we celebrate the resurrection. So why would we live into sorrow, lament, Good Friday, when we know how it ends, right? We are an Easter people. Why do we do this? What purpose does it serve?
Yeah, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this because you've written a piece on Maundy. It includes this, but we're just forgetful people. We're forgetful people. We have to preach the gospel to ourselves all the time, remind ourselves of who we are constantly. I think that that's just recognizing that's our nature, that we need to be called back into the story, into the narrative, to relive it, to be reminded of it, to fall in love with it over and over again, but also just as a way of giving ourselves, like throughout Lent, sort of a spiritual checkup, being called into alignment with Jesus. It's so powerful because it is a 3-day service, we do feel like we're walking with Jesus. It feels very dramatic. Maundy, Good Friday, they all are very dramatic, and you find yourself in the story. And so I think being able to walk with Jesus for these 3 days is a powerful thing that never gets old, but for some reason we forget and we're drawn back into it every year. So
I think too, to think of, yeah, like why the sorrow? Like why be sad? Like the world's sad, and let's not intentionally be sad. Like sadness comes very easily on its own, you know, hardship. Why contrive our life in such a way to enter into that? And I think that part of one of the ways that we can kind of frame that is that the Easter message is not simply celebration, but what's being revealed is a pattern of cross and resurrection. You know, Paul says, I came to just preach Christ crucified. And of course, the resurrection is in that kernel of scandalous truth. But what's being revealed in Easter, like what makes the resurrection just in many ways, or what makes really the crucifixion so scandalous is the resurrection. Because now this fiasco. Wait, God was here? Like, you know, it was a failure. But then you realize that the pattern of cross and resurrection, this is what we're entering into, and that is a movement. There's kind of a duality there. It's not static. It's a movement. And, of course, the readings for in the gospel for this week where Jesus himself says, you know, that unless a seed dies, it can't bear any fruit. And he's living that out on his way to Jerusalem. And I think that, yeah, so being honest about what we mean when we say, well, Sunday's Resurrection Day, you don't get there. You don't circumvent crucifixion. That's precisely resurrection.
And it's not like a memory. We're not like just remembering. We're invited to walk with Jesus in those days, and it feels like a sacramental people. We are not just like pointing to some reality that is far off, but God makes himself near to us in these things and then allows us to walk. It's really a beautiful occasion. I love it. Yeah. What about you,
Alex? Yeah, I mean, I think just the embodiment of it is the thing that really drew me into the liveliness of this season, right? So, like, there's Lent, which is, again, this embodiment that you're fasting from things, you're giving things up, you're feeling it in your body, like the loss. Yeah. And I think with Maundy Thursday especially, it's, you know, as a priest to wash. It's one thing to say, you know, I'm a servant leader, right? Yeah. Or have the concepts like, okay, and this is what it means to, you know, you put your desires behind your church or your people, and you want to lead and blah, blah.
Thank you, John Maxwell.
Yeah, thank you. That's right, yeah. But for somebody, you know, for somebody to come up and for me to ask, can I wash your feet? And like, in getting my feet washed, right? Yeah, like,
it's humbling.
It is. It's like this, you tangibly take your stinky socks out after, you know, it's at the night, so you're they're maybe sweaty in there, and then your priest washing your feet and inviting you in that cleansing. And I think the most powerful moment in any liturgical service, mass, for me is stripping the altar, right? And then contemplating, like, the law, like, to walk with the disciples and imagine, like, again, we're story form people. We're not sermonized people, right? We're not kind of logical dictum people. So to sit with the, like, imagining with the disciples cleaning up after the, you know, as, you know, Gary, you say, like, we're stripping the altar and, like, cleaning up after a feast, like, after the Last Supper, seeing it bare and imagining, like, the loss, the disappointment, knowing what's going to come and sitting in that, like, failure of everybody and the chaos and the barrenness. Like, you can say those words and they mean something, but to see it, to sit with it, to contemplate it, to walk through it, that the embodiment of it for me is just, it comes anew every year to walk with Jesus, you know, to, again, be embodied in the story, to walk with Jesus through the story, makes Resurrection Sunday, it's not like it doesn't, it didn't mean something, now it does, but it's just walking this path, yeah, and then having the Easter joy through Lent, through Holy Week, and now, like, oh, man, there's a new level of thankfulness of, yeah, what Jesus has done, and our part in it as, yeah, well, you know.
Yeah.
So let's, you know, I talked a little bit about Maundy Thursday, foot wash, stripping the altar, and things like that. But talk us through what these services look like, what they're for, what do we do during them? Yeah.
So Palm Sunday, we come in with the palm branches, and we talked a little bit about that. It's about that, about the readings. And then when you get to Maundy, Maundy means mandate. And it's based on the mandate that we ought to wash one another's feet. Is Jesus says, I have given you an example. As I have done, you should do also. So from John 13. So there's that mandate from Jesus. And then the institution of the Last Supper was that night. And so we have communion. And we, like you said, it's quiet when we exit. And it's eerie. It's a powerful service. There is no final blessing because we then go on to the next part of the service the next day, Good Friday, where sometimes we wear black, sometimes the color will change to red to symbolize the blood of the cross. We venerate the cross on that night, which means we don't come and worship the cross, but we give thanks for what happened on the cross. It's a powerful service that contemplates the crucifixion of Jesus. Holy Saturday, one thing I'm urging our church to do this year is to observe a day of silence. Jesus was in the tomb and then descends to the dead. And I think it's preparation for vigil, to be able to have that silence. Traditionally, Holy Saturday has been a day of very intentional prayer instead of praying.
I think maybe most of us are familiar with like Last Supper or washing feet. That sounds fine. You know, Good Friday, crucifixion, that's kind of what we're about.
Yeah.
This idea of like Holy Saturday and even like what we confess every week, that he descended to the dead.
Yeah.
Like, why is that a central part of our story? I feel like that's something that maybe gets lost in Protestant circles sometimes, that's a part of the thing that we confess every week.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit about the descent. What does that mean? Why do we say that? Why do we confess that?
that's an intense part of our story that we don't think about. What happened while Jesus was in the tomb for 3 days, and that's intentional. I mean, we need to consider it, we need to ponder it, we need to think about the defeat, like what happened at the cross, not just that he died, but what was accomplished is so much encapsulated in what happened in the descent to the dead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think definitely, I mean, one aspect of this descending into Hades, this descending to the dead, is this total and tenacious solidarity with us,
mm-hmm,
in the state of death, but also not just simple like finitude, but the death of judgment. In Christian tradition, it's important. Has historically and still, we're kind of ambivalent about death. We say, the last enemy to defeat is big D death, and yet we will also celebrate Christ's death, and then we also can talk truthfully about a good death, and the Old Testament certainly does that as well. That's just a natural part of being finite, which is not, according to many church fathers, that's not a bad thing to be finite. That's to be created. Mm. But then we need to be brought into union with the uncreated. And Jesus, the uncreated Logos, the second person of the Trinity, in the hypostatic union of his human nature and divine nature enters mysteriously fully into our own finitude and our own helplessness. Mm-hmm. And that means he's going down.
Yeah.
And he goes down. Mm-hmm. And there's something very true about, I think, the space, the liminal space of Holy Saturday. Like, I think most of our life will feel like it's a Holy Saturday. Mm-hmm. We're in between. We feel, you know, the pain of the cross. We see the hope in Christ's death, and we're looking forward to the hope of resurrection. And we are often negotiating this liminal space. In many ways, I think it's probably the most true. That day, more than any other day on Holy Week, maps on to our present, this present age, like for us. I mean, in many ways, is we're thinking dramatically.
I love the icon, too, of Jesus, the heroine of hell, where Jesus, in it's his resurrection. I mean, he raises from the dead, but then it's depicted in him reaching into actual, like, graves and pulling people out with him. So that he really entered into death with us. You see Adam and Eve being raised from their sin, from their death, the consequences that he sort of overcomes in that moment. And then we really raise with him. Mm-hmm. Like he pulls us out of the dead with himself as he raises. So it's beautiful.
Yeah. And I love that on that icon too, it like trampling Satan's territory. Like he goes to the dead. And he's trampling on Satan in that icon as well. And yeah, I think it's just that again, the feeling of solidarity with, like, have you ever felt abandoned? Like, death is this great abandonment. Yeah. Death is this great loss, this great lament, this great sorrow, this great dependence. See, like, do you ever feel that? And Christ goes to the deepest place. And I love how I think it's Balthasar says, he makes a prison into a way, right? He goes to the depths, and now with with Christ now, we will die, but that death is no longer a prison. We're not captive there, that's now the way to resurrected life.
That's good.
And so, yeah, I love the kind of, I love Holy Saturday, and I think we neglect it to our own kind of detriment, kind of considering
totally.
This.
I love the silence to me. Is I can just imagine. Mm. Jesus behind that stone, I mean, in that tomb, how they must have felt. And they probably were just cooped up in that room staring at each other like, what just happened? Mm. And I mean, if we're honest with ourselves, we feel that so much.
Yeah.
Like, confused or alone and wondering when this will all culminate. It's powerful.
Yeah, it's great. Now, how about, because we also do on Saturday Easter Vigil, which has a celebratory note. So it's not the sorrow that we may feel during the day, but, you know, the lights go out proverbially and Christ raised from the dead. So
say that one more time.
Yeah, proverbially.
Once more for the camera.
So, yeah, talk to us about Easter Vigil. What do we do for that service?
So it does start sort of on a somber note in the darkness, and we walk in with the fire. The Paschal candle is lit outside in a kind of a small bonfire. And we usher it into, we process into a dark sanctuary. And then, yeah, there's all sorts of fanfare after contemplating the story of salvation from the Old Testament forward. And, man, we just go nuts. We ring bells and we have the candles lit and shout hallelujah, sing the Gloria. And then we redecorate. Everything that was taken out at Maundy is put back into the sanctuary. It's so festive. I love the way there's this contrast of Holy Saturday, Good Friday, Maundy to Easter Vigil. And it's when you think about it as the time where people were baptized into the church and people who were isolated from the community because of notorious sins were welcomed back in after the time of Lent. It is a joyous occasion. We actually will baptize on Easter Vigil, but it is really seen as the pinnacle service of the church year. And on Sunday, of course, we'll eat and celebrate, and it is the contrast is so beautiful and makes Easter such a wonderful celebration.
That's great. So how? So we asked what, right? What is it? Mm-hmm. We've kind of answered that. Why? We've given some reasons. But how would you invite us to kind of walk through this? You mentioned silence on Holy Saturday. But any other ways that, like, you can just practically help or suggest or what practices other than just showing up we could do?
Mm-hmm. Which is good.
It's just it's good. Half the
showing up, honestly, maybe that's, like, that week, maybe that is all you can do. Mm-hmm. That's God's – that's an opening of grace.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
Yeah, it's hard to walk in there not – enter into prayer mm-hmm. and contemplation. I think giving yourself wholly to it is important. Just a plan now, like make the decision right now that you're going to be there. And it's not a guilt thing. It is about like I Christ will capture your heart in this time, and I really want that for our church. And it is a protest against the world in some ways to say, like, I do not tell time in the same way. Like Colby mentioned, Kairos time, we're telling time differently. And we're stepping into this season and we're making it a priority. And, you know, you are not what you produce. Like, it's okay. You can leave your stuff for a few hours and come in there. And it is a sacrifice. I remember my brother-in-law says oftentimes, like, it was so hard for him to imagine going to church for 4 days in a row and how difficult it was for him to imagine that. But then he's like, it was the most powerful thing. And he obviously didn't regret it. And it's been part of his schedule ever since. So I would just say give yourself to it.
I would say, too, and this is kind of a little bit about, like, why we do this and the importance of repetition. Father Gary mentioned, like, we are tendencies to forget. And I would say that there's something about spiritual knowledge that when you feel like you've experientially, you've perceived or grasped spiritual knowledge, it will feel like a second knowing. It will feel like you've known something a second time or a deeper time, or you've digested it differently, and you, in a sense, you know what you always knew, or you now know something that you always knew was true, and experientially you kind of sink into that deeper level. And I think repetition, the church calendar offers, takes seriously that aspect of growing spiritually and growing in union and knowledge with God. And I think that being open, you know, if you're saying, look, I already know what they're going to do on Thursday. I already know what we're going to say on Friday. You know, mm-hmm. like, I get that. I get it. You know, we repeat liturgy every Sunday, right? Mm-hmm. And we can have that. And the point is not, hey, let me repeat something that I already know. But let me, maybe I actually don't know what I don't know, and maybe I actually don't know what I think I know. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a couple Sundays ago, we were cleaning up downstairs in the fellowship hall, and you see the prayer that our AA friends are praying right before they start the meeting. I forget exactly, but a part of the prayer, I was like, man, this is good spirituality down here. But it was help me to be open to the things that I don't know, and help me to essentially not assume what I know is what's actually true, but to be open to that which I do not know. And I think that entering gracefully and faithfully, full of faith into a Holy Week is going to be something like that, where we're open to knowing things maybe for the first time in a deeper way, in an experiential way. And I think when we talk about the body and sense perception, we're talking about that spiritual knowledge is seeping in, you know, to us.
Yeah, I do think on that note, I think sometimes we think about the church, we think about the calendar, the secular calendar is like chronos time, this thing we've been saying, like it's just one time after another, right? It's just year after year, moment after moment, it just kind of goes on. And kairos time being this kind of divine time that we enter into a different calendar of repetition, right? We do the same thing over and over again each year. But that's it, like the two options aren't repetitive in the church calendar or kind of moment after moment progression, but it's something maybe more like cyclical. Like we walked through this last year, but now we have a year of experience, a year of knowledge, a year of hurt, a year of pain that we're experiencing the same thing in a sense, but in a very new way based on what we're, what we've experienced the past year, so that we can actually enter into each season a different person with different knowledge, with different reasons, with different motives, with different purposes, with all of that, because we're walking kind of our path, our pilgrimage to God, right? And so we're kind of going up in this spiral through time that's retold, but in new ways each season.
Yeah, yeah. I think that that helix, the image of the helix, is really important. That what it's not a strict linearity, you know. You know, I need not do this again because I already know this. Well, the you that knew that is 10 months old, you know, now, you know, or 12, whatever it is. And that's so beautiful. That's, very important.
Any last words?
No, you all are invited. This is part of our everyday monk, you know, vow of stability to each other. And so I just pray that we don't see this as seeking our own experience, but seeking to walk this path with Jesus together. And so let's do it.
Yeah. Maybe even a different framing is that this is not just an invitation, but this is what the church is doing. And you're a part of the church. Yeah. And
that's a good
we're
way
doing it.
You mean if somebody invites me to Chili's on Thursday night?
it means a little bit different.
I should.
You're giving up chips and salsa chips for and Lent, right?
All right, friends. Well, hope to see you during Holy Week, and thankful for these friendships and your friendship. We'll keep on keeping on.
God bless y'all. God bless.